How should parents respond to advice from their kids about sharenting? Professor Leah Plunkett joins me to discuss. This is the UNH Law Podcast. Learn more about the law school and apply by visiting law.unh.edu. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or hosts and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire. So, Leah, you forwarded to me an article from the New York Times opinion section regarding this subject. What were some of the things they were trying to cover in that?
The New York Times reached out to teenagers to ask them for their thoughts and guidance for their parents on sharenting. And sharenting is a word that's increasingly being used in the media. The way it's typically used is to refer to content that parents post about kids on social media. I actually think that the term properly understood is more inclusive. I think that as we start to really think about the sharenting problem we have in this country, because yes, it is a problem, we should be thinking of sharenting as all the ways that parents, teachers, coaches, and other trusted adults share, post, transmit, click, whatever it is, kids' private information through a digital device or platform or service. So social media is an obvious one, but all of us in our homes these days are putting fitness trackers on, having smart devices, having Alexas. There's so many ways that we are sharenting. But to focus back in on what these kids were focused on, they were saying to their parents, essentially, please stop posting so much about me. If you're going to post, you need my consent. And one of the things that really jumped out to me as a law professor and mother and scholar in this area was the teenager who said that she had made her parents sign a sharenting contract, and they were no longer allowed to interact with her on social media unless they signed the contract and adhered to it. And I found that fascinating, AJ.
I mean, from a legal perspective, I mean, what sort of independence do kids from just entirely from the legal perspective, let alone from the parenting perspective, do kids have when it comes to this if they're over 13? I'm assuming we're mostly talking about.
We are talking about kids over 13 at this point. The answer is that kids truly have zero control over whether, when, why, how, and what their parents sharent about them. There are some outer limit exceptions to that. So if heaven forbid, a parent is manufacturing child pornography or sharenting footage of an abusive situation or a neglectful one, then our criminal laws or other what we call laws of general applicability kick in. So to put it another way, you don't get a free pass on breaking laws that apply to all of us just because you're doing it as a parent. But outside of those outer limits, and those truly are fringe situations, when I say we have a sharenting problem, I don't mean that parents are breaking any existing laws on a regular basis. What I mean is that because of the legal system that's in place, when the child is under 18, it really is up to the parent what the parent is sharing about that child. So part of what I found so fascinating about a sharenting contract is it has zero legal weight, at least under our current system. But I found it fascinating that a minor was trying to enter into a contract with a parent around that parent's behavior. I found it very interesting that we're seeing our kids looking to common and existing legal structures. We all sign contracts all the time. Sometimes we don't even realize we're doing it because we're just clicking on the click wrap or click through agreement. But the kid is essentially saying, you know, mom, dad, you're out of control. Let's bring in a little bit of law here. And, you know, from the legal perspective, the court would never enforce something like that.
Future libertarian, it seems like.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, this is fascinating because this is, I mean, we talked about in the previous episode where we discussed your upcoming book on this, which is coming out this month, actually, which we can talk about at the end.
Thank you, AJ, for sure. I appreciate that.
I mean, there is no real groundwork of laws when it comes to this sort of stuff because it's so new. There's very few stuff, like we talked about, from the criminal perspective, which is obvious. And it's been around forever, even before digital media existed.
Right.
So that almost seems like a good way of just sitting down with your child and thinking about these sort of things ahead of time before you start really going full bore. I mean, just like with previous generations with technology, the younger generation always seems to get just that leg up on their parents when it comes to some of this.
Totally. I think that's exactly right, that the idea of a sharenting contract or a sharenting agreement, or in the book I talk about a family digital privacy plan, I think is a wonderful exercise for a family to engage in, even though it has no binding legal significance. And I would really encourage parents to take a lead on it. So it's always wonderful to learn from our kids. You're completely right that especially when it comes to technology, we're learning from our kids all the time. I recently got a new iPhone and my 8-year-old taught me how to make the, what are they called, Animoji things. It's awesome. We lost like hours of our lives to like making ourselves into talking dogs and texting them to my parents. So that was fun. But look, parents are charged by the law, and I'm painting with a very broad brush here, but we're charged with protecting our kids. We're in charge of their welfare, their safety, their moral upbringing. And even putting the law aside, almost all parents naturally feel those impulses. So we want to protect our kids. We want to be good role models for them. So rather than waiting for them to come to us to be like, hey, you can't follow me unless you stop telling all your friends what I'm up to, let's take the lead. And when, in terms of what would go into a sharenting contract or a family digital privacy plan, I would really encourage parents to think first and foremost at the level of values or principles. So before you get into arguing with your teenager over whether Facebook is cool because only old people are on it, but Instagram isn't because my friends might actually see it, right? I mean, because people are very savvy about
privacy settings and things like that, with what can be shared outside of your immediate group too, very
easily. Absolutely. And also understanding, as I think kids do more than parents, that even with privacy settings, screenshots are so easy that even old people like me can do them. So, but I think thinking about what are the values you want in your home, and in the book I talk about sort of four overarching values that I think are a good starting point around principles of play. So set up home and community life as a protected place to explore. Forget. So even if you're going to post on social media and you understand that nothing ever really goes away from the digital world, you can at least do a little bit of a spring cleanup the same way you might your closet or your car. So every 6 months, every year, pull the stuff off that's going to be embarrassing to your kids when they're a year or two older. Then connect. Really think about, what are you using this digital technology for? Are you choosing to use a surveillance app, let's say, for your teenager because you're putting a primacy on connecting with them around their whereabouts versus connecting with them on trying to teach them how to make decisions about their whereabouts? I'm truly not judging. There are many circumstances I can think of where a parent would be completely reasonable to say, I get that I should try to teach my kid how to make smart decisions about where they go. For whatever reason, I don't know if they're there yet. And for whatever reason, I can't monitor them. Connecting with them digitally is more important to me than connecting with them around this, sort of on a personal level, privacy be damned. And then the last one is respect. And I, for this one, actually, it is both about, of course, considering your child's autonomy and developing sense of agency and self. It's also actually a very utilitarian idea, which is, we are paying for free or low cost digital services and devices with our data. You know, the Facebook app on my phone, the Twitter app, the whatever, we're paying for that with data. And if we're choosing to pay for that with data about ourselves, I mean, maybe some people find it would be interesting to know what I had for breakfast, who knows? But that really, you know, I'm an adult, that's my choice. But why would we pay for that with data about our kids? That is a gold mine for advertising, marketing, for data brokers, for who knows what other kind of predictive analytic products downstream. It would seem to me that, again, even from a very almost kind of crass utilitarian calculation, if we can get the same service from Instagram, if we pay for it with our own data, which we can, and that we get access, maybe we don't get as many likes because kids are super cute, but maybe we should be really thinking about respecting our kids' digital capital and not spending it too freely.
Anything else on this article that stood out to you?
The level of frustration and shame and anger on the part of the kids. And I would assume, although this particular article was more about the kids, there was a previous video the New York Times Privacy Project did on parents talking with their kids. And parents really do, I think, genuinely not understand where the anger, frustration, and shame is coming from. And some of that is just kind of classic, right? Like, everyone, I think, remembers the moments in middle school where your parents, the most embarrassing thing in the world, no matter what they do. So we have to sort of Putting that aside, though, the kids are on to something their parents are not seeing, which is that at the same time that they are trying to forge their own identities, to have a protected place to play, to make mischief, make mistakes, learn from them, grow up better for them, their parents are tracking that.
Right.
They're sharing it, and they're not getting permission, nor even if the law is not going to require them to get permission, are they trying to use what the law might call substituted decision making? So if I say to my 2-year-old, is it okay if I post this? Well, they don't really know. Although I think kids as young as 3 or 4 probably have an idea. But parents can also just think to themselves, would I have been okay with this information being shared if my parents had put the same information about me on a billboard, in the local newspaper?
Yeah, I mean, there's a big change now where instead of where the embarrassing thing you would do with your kid is, oh, I'm following them at Halloween or I'm at the game and I'm being obnoxious in the audience during that. And now it's, I'm digitally publishing.
Correct. Correct. That's a great age. So imagine, so for parents now who sort of grew up pre-digital or just on the cusp of digital, how would you have felt if, in addition to being in the stands at the game and like going crazy cheering for you, there were a whole series of posts about how you did in the game and how your parent was so proud because you'd been really nervous, but you overcame it. Well, that is a proud parenting moment, but it's embarrassing for the kid to have it documented that they were ever embarrassed about anything. So I guess that's my last piece of advice to parents, as well as teachers, coaches, grandparents, et cetera, but especially to parents, try to think back to your 13-year-old self, your 12-year-old self, if you would not have been cool seeing this information as an ad in your local newspaper or announced from, the pulpit at your church or your synagogue, right, as a matter of public interest, your kid's probably not going to be cool with it either. And I don't buy that kids don't care about privacy or they don't know or that privacy is dead, so our kids aren't going to care when they're our age. I think they're going to care a lot more, possibly even than we do.
You had a book coming out. You had a book release coming up. You want to plug some of that?
Thank you so much. Sharenthood, Why We Should Think Before We Talk About Our Kids Online, which is part of the MIT Press Strong Ideas series, is coming out next week, September 10th, 2019. On September 10th, I'll be speaking at the MIT Press bookstore in Cambridge. I'll be joined by Steve Smith, who is an amazing leader in the privacy space. He's the chief information officer for Cambridge Public Schools and the founder of the Student Data Privacy Consortium, so we'll be in conversation. And then on Thursday, September 12th, I will be at Gibson's Bookstore, which is our hometown Main Street independent bookstore, to talk about the book there at 6 o'clock. LeahPlunkett.com has all of the tour dates coming up. I'll be bouncing around the country a little bit, and I'm really, really excited to hear from kids about what they wish their parents knew and also parents about what they're trying to do, as well as everyone else in the community who is trying to figure this out.
Thanks for listening to the UNH Law Podcast. Learn more about us by visiting law.unh.edu or following UNH Law on social media. Be sure to comment and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or host and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire.